Hey, what's up, guys? This is Ben from the Friday 13th Network over on YouTube, and you have to check out our friends Rants from the Black Lodge podcast as they review what many consider the best Friday 13th fan film, Never Hike Alone. Now, fan films are pretty hot right now, but none of them would be where they are today without this one. Just from the opening shots, you know this is no ordinary fan film. Lots of time and love went into this project. The cinematography, editing, wardrobe, it all comes together beautifully with a story that actually makes sense. So many times we've seen Jason killing teens in the woods who honestly have no reason to be there other than get killed, but not here. It all makes sense and adds to the legend of Jason Voorhees and Crystal Lake. Never Hike Alone is a must-see for any Friday the 13th fan.
Recording live from the Black Lodge, it's me, the free will burning, head turning, ass kicking, machismo dripping, master podcast and mouthpiece of the Southeast. Brandon A. Lane bringing you a new edition of the Rants from the Black Lodge podcast. The bitter lawsuit between writer Victor Miller and director Sean Cunningham has seemingly left the Friday the 13th franchise buried 6 feet under. But Jason lives through content created by people like the gentleman you heard at the top of this episode, Ben from the Friday the 13th Network on YouTube. Now, if you've been living under a rock and you're not familiar with the great content they produce, well, here's a quick rundown. Bringing the Friday the 13th universe together one video at a time. The Friday the 13th Network was created for one reason. All the videos in the same spot, organized and easy to find. Not to mention some great original content along the way. It's kind of like the NFL Network or the WWE Network. But with Jason, you want to see some behind-the-scenes footage or that special feature on that DVD you used to have? Remember when Kane Hodder was on the Arsenio Hall show in full Jason wardrobe? They've got it all. Timelines, bios, interviews, and lots more. If you're a horror fan, there's something here for you. This is your channel. Well, there you go, Rant Army. Assemble your forces. You got to follow them on Twitter right now, at F13Net. And don't forget to subscribe to them on YouTube. I'll leave a link in the description. They're great. Good stuff. Once you've followed them on Twitter, don't forget to give us a follow at Rants Black Lodge. Subscribe to the podcast on one of our many platforms, including iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, Podbean, Player FM, iHeartRadio. And don't forget to stop by our homepage at JuicyKruger.com. I'm sure from that outstanding intro from Ben that he was kind enough to do for us. Thank you, Ben. It was really cool of you. That you figured out that we're doing Never Hike Alone this month. How could we ever hope to do this masterpiece justice without the participation of the film's director and star? So, after some messages from our sponsors, I'll be sitting down with the man behind the mask himself, Vincent DeSanti. So, stay tuned.
Next Generation Wrestling brings some of the most talked about and star-studded professional wrestlers from around the world. Based out of East Tennessee, NGW is becoming one of the most sought-after independent wrestling promotions in the past 4 years. Witness NGW Live or on demand on the High Spots Wrestling Network streaming app. Follow us on social media platforms at NextGenTN.
In 1980, cinema's unluckiest day took the world by storm. Now, nearly 40 years later, Mrs. Voorhees' baby boy is tangled in a Hollywood lawsuit the size of Godzilla. But much like Jason's ability to never truly die, Friday the 13th is continuing, not from the studio who birthed him, but from fans like the man I'm speaking with today, star and director of Never Hike Alone, Vincent DeSanti. Thank you so much, Vincent, for taking some time out of your busy schedule. I know we've been playing email tag for quite a while. So thank you so much for taking a stop by here at the Black Lodge.
Yes, thank you very much for having me and for dealing with my weird travel schedule. It just had me bouncing all over the place. Yeah, I've been looking forward to speak with you, and I'm glad we're able to finally do it.
Well, it's much appreciated on our end, and let's take a little trip back in time. Now, it's 2017, and for the lack of a better descriptor, you're just a fan mm-hmm. wanting to make the best Friday the 13th fan film of all time.
yeah. which I'm going to say it right now, you know, hyperbole, unrivaled. Fast forward, it drops on YouTube, and I think to date it has somewhere around 900,000 views, which is astronomical. What has been the response and the impact that you've had from Never Hike Alone professionally and personally?
Wow. It's a loaded question because it's been a lot. I mean, so much has changed since from when Never Hike Alone was just this fun idea I had to now this like monster which has taken over my life. And for good and bad, I mean, it was Never Hike Alone for me was a personal journey to not only do what I've always wanted to do, which was make a Friday the 13th film. When I moved to LA, if anyone's ever watched the behind the scenes, I've said it before, like I wanted to work on a Friday the 13th film and I just never thought I was going to get to. So I thought I'd do it for myself as a fun project. And it turned into something way much more than I ever expected it to be. What it was really supposed to do for me and what it has done is open up doors in the live action entertainment side of things, as I was working in animation prior to this. And I wanted to prove to people that I could work on set, that I could create live action material and not just be an animation person for the rest of my life. And since then, I've been afforded a lot of opportunities to work on everything from commercials to infomercials to, you know, The Rookie for ABC and some really cool low-budget indie horror films and other independent films and other projects.
A 13 Fanboy coming up?
13 Fanboy, which I am flying out to New Mexico tomorrow to start filming.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. And yeah, so opportunities like that where I've had a chance to work with my other friends and act in other fan films. So like, you know, The Spirit of Haddonfield with Renee Rivas. And,
which was terrific, by the way.
Which we had a lot of fun with. And The Face of Michael Myers, which I did with the guys from Hawthorne Films, which was really cool. Nice. We did like a short prelude short. You know, now 13 Fanboy. I've been working with the guys up in Portland who are doing Jason Rising, helping them write and produce that film. Since then, Wompstomp Films has been able to raise funds for our own original project called Pathosis, which we just got finished shooting about a month ago in Glendale, California, and we're working on in post right now for the upcoming festival season. So yeah, there's just it's sparked a lot where I used to be this guy who was wishing that I could spend more time creating my own projects, you know, being at work and, you know, working for other people and working on, you know, big films that were going out to the theaters, not really getting what I wanted out of the experience and then creating the experience for myself. And it's been crazy because it's more of a freelance life. So I never know really what I'm doing 2 months from now. but that excitement also, you know, puts a fire under your butt and you got to keep moving. You got to keep working and you find ways to make it work.
Well, I'm amazed at the response that people have had for this film because I guess maybe there's sort of a negative connotation towards it's a fan film.
Mm-hmm.
But I think pretty much across the board, people seem to have overwhelmingly adorned this as, you know, probably the best Friday the 13th piece of content released at the very least since the Paramount days. One of the things that I love about Never Hike Alone is it's sort of returned to those old school roots of, you know, camping and hiking in the secluded areas. And at the same time, it brings something fresh to the table with having, you know, not a big body count movie. It's, you know, an isolated story, a guy hiking alone to unfortunate circumstances. I'm kind of curious, which of the films did you draw inspiration from? Like, what was your Bible in constructing Never Hike Alone?
I love all the films to a certain degree, but I think for me, my bubble was the Paramount era, 1 through 8, taking aspects from each of those, you know, in little different ways, like not really having to feel like, because we all know the canon is all over the place, and trying to follow that with a direct through line is almost impossible. You can directly relate to specific films and branch off of them, which some other fan films are doing, like a direct sequel to another one. And my idea was that I wanted to take all of what made the original 8 really special to all of us for different reasons and just repackage it. And create my own streamlined world where I could pick and choose what canon I wanted to follow, but then do my best to kind of fill in gaps here and there. So I think people who have really followed Never Hike Alone and follow what I've talked about have kind of seen where I've, you know, I've changed certain things, like the forest green aspect of it, and I kept it that Camp Crystal Lake was never changed, but I kept Tommy in the film. So there was confusion there, but it made more sense, you know, for me to come out today and do a film about Camp Crystal Lake makes sense. If I would have done it about Forest Green, I think there would have been a lot of people who, you know, enjoyed the film now who would have been like, wait, I thought this all happened at Camp Crystal Lake, who don't really understand the franchise like most of us do. And I think that that would have caused confusion. So sometimes you just make an executive decision like that to be like, you know what, I'm just going to make it the camp that everybody knows, and I'll come up with an excuse later for Forest Green. And in the process of doing that, create a fun exercise. Like anyone who backed our campaign and received a script, whether digital or physical, if they flip to one of the last pages in the script, you'll see what happened to Camp Forest Green and why Camp Crystal Lake still stands. So we did our best to kind of fill in some gaps where we know we broke some rules. But most of all, it was like the tone and atmosphere of the original films, which were very creepy and scared me as a child. And I think that, like what you said, like the sense of isolation. And I think as we played as children and were friends, you know, not friends, but as we were fans of Friday the 13th, we were friends with Friday the 13th. It really was. I mean, it probably was friends for a lot of us. It was the tape that we hung out with all weekend instead of going out to play with our friends.
So many lost nights and days to VHS copies worn so ragged thin you couldn't see them, you know?
Yeah, but so it came down to all those times as a child or even as a young adult or even as an adult I've ever been in a situation where I was alone and isolated. And having that one brief glimpse of like, huh, imagine if Jason came out right now. What would I do? And I think that the concept really, really matured itself. The simple concept of being alone with Jason in the woods and how long you could last started as a 5-minute premise. It was stretched out to 54 minutes because fans kept demanding us to make it longer. And we found out ways to stretch it out. And by doing that, instead of focusing on like, well, let's, you know, add more people and do all these things, we focused on the elements that we had that didn't give us any extra cost since we were really working with a very small budget. So it was more about making a character out of the camp and the woods. And those aspects, which I believe were pretty overlooked in the original series. I think in some instances we get some cool locations and things like that, but really rarely did they ever focus on like focusing on the camp as its own character or the forest as its own character with its own set of, you know, obstacles and things to look at and things it can add to the plot in the way that it kind of moves the plot along. And in this world, it's really, you know, in the Never Hike Alone world, Kyle's character is really a rediscovery of those feelings that we have for Camp Crystal Lake. The first 15 minutes when he's, you know, he's coming through the woods, it's reestablishing our connection and our fear of the forest. When he finds the camp and he starts walking through there, it reestablishes our nostalgia and connection with the camp that it's been lost. We haven't seen it in a long time, not just as, you know, an adventure going through, but as fans. It feels like a very long time since we've actually sat down and got to look at the walls of Camp Crystal Lake or ingest something Friday the 13th that felt authentic and real. And so that was my mission for the first half of the film. Yeah, we're not running around and doing too many scary things. We got a few little fun jump scares, a few little glimpses of Jason, but mostly it's about reestablishing our connection to this world before we unleash Jason and have all of our fun. You know, and I think if we talk about films that inspired it, you know, you're not really looking at Friday the 13th films that are inspiring the way that this story plays out. You're actually looking at other films and the way that Friday the 13th as a concept infested their concept, like 127 Hours or The Martian.
Yes.
Or Into the Wild or The Descent. Anything that has to do with a character going into a location that is focused on its nature-based and then that nature having an effect on them, whether it be a rock falling on their arm and being isolated and trying to get out, or being stuck on Mars and using their know-how to defeat the challenges that it faces. In our world, this is a character who goes out, gets isolated, and then has to deal with Jason one-on-one. So it's not a brand new story by any means, but the way that we use information and characters and elements is what makes them original and unique, and that's what we did. We took the Friday the 13th flavor, and instead of trying to jam something into like its old formula, we got rid of the formula and used the concept into a formula that we think works better for today's audiences.
I, when the first time I watched the film, I got a sense of the how far out and alone the character was, and it almost reminded me of John Carpenter's The Thing, because he goes to such great lengths to show you how isolated those people are. And let's just be honest, probably most of the Friday the 13th films by today's standards are not exactly scary, but I'll tell you a story. Earlier this year, I'm with some coworkers, and we keep in radio contact for our positions, not to get too much in the whole of what I do for a day job, but we're killing time because it's slow, and we're watching Never Hike Alone on my phone on YouTube. The other two people had never seen it before. I had seen it at this point probably 15, maybe 20 times, because when this came out, it was, you know, this is the only Friday the 13th related content we'd had in so long that really achieved to my affection the standard of what it could be. Mm-hmm. So we're sitting around, we're watching it, and it's just about the time where the camp is discovered, and you see the sign, and our coworker comes over the radio, and all three of us screeched like schoolgirls. So I think the film is effective on that end. So kudos to you and the team for really bringing something that harkens back to something old, but also brings something new to the table. Mm-hmm. I want to touch a little bit on the lawsuit that's going on currently, mm-hmm. and will probably be continuing for quite some time between Victor Miller and Sean Cunningham. I'm curious, has there been any legal pushback from either side for you producing Never Hike Alone?
No, I don't think any of the fan films have received any cease and desists or any negative impact from the lawsuits. We exist outside of that world because we're not making money. That's kind of, we're raising money, we're raising production funds, but it's really tough to come down on a set of people who all agree to pool their money to have something done. You know, if I got my friends together and we all pooled in personally money to go film something, it's really tough to stop people from doing that. And I think that's why that, you know, a cease and desist for a lot of these things becomes a waste of time. Obviously, you know, places like Kickstarter and Indiegogo do make a nice little chunk of change off of it, a couple grand here and there. And then you have us, you know, any overflow money that we've had, you've seen it go into donations or different projects or things like that. And the type of money you're talking about for, say, Warner Brothers or New Line or Paramount or Sean Cunningham or Victor Miller to stop what they're doing with their legal battle and then sue us would end up costing them way more money than what that they would be able to, one, pinch out of us from whatever, you know, from whatever funds we're raising. If they wanted to take a percentage off of our fundraising, you know, there's not much there, especially from their standards. And the second part of it is, do they really want to piss off fans that much more?
I would have, at this point, I think they really should avoid it, because we're already pretty up in arms about the things that are going on in this lawsuit, mm-hmm. you know, the killing of the video game, and you know, that's a whole rabbit hole you can go down, whether or not that was intentional or not. But I was just curious, like, because the version of your Jason ended up in the killer puzzle game, which I have to say, I just started playing a couple of days ago, and it is the most addictive game I've ever played. Yeah. It's so much fun. But how did your involvement with Ghost Jason end up in that game?
It was interesting. I mean, it was them and the Friday the 13th, the game guys, who through Never Hike Alone, I became pretty close with, or at least got to know them a little bit, and we would go back and forth. And, you know, I think the key element there is that all three of these projects, Never Hike Alone, Friday the 13th, the game, and the puzzle game, were all created by fans. We're fans first who just happen to have skills in different areas, whether it be gaming or films or mobile games, that we wanted to use our passion for Friday the 13th to create something. You know, Ronnie and Wes and Randy and those guys over at Friday the 13th, the game, were able to put it together, get Sean Cunningham on board and make it. Same thing with the puzzle game. They were able to do their thing. And we were kind of the pirate radio out in the middle of the forest doing our own stuff without anybody watching us. But the difference between us and the puzzle game and the Friday the 13th game is that they were a for-profit venture that was making money for the franchises. And that's why, as they were generating money for Sean, when the lawsuit went under, they, you know, that's what cut them off. And for us, we weren't generating, you know, we were only generating content, not revenue. So that's where we kind of slipped under the radar. And as far as like getting involved with the games and stuff like that, you know, it was really touch and go, because at the time it was like the rights holders were really iffy about whether or not they wanted to give credence to fan filmdom. And there were certain elements where we were allowed, like in the Friday the 13th puzzle game, where they, you know, they contacted us and they'd be like, hey, we think it'd be really cool if we did like a custom character, because, you know, they were doing guest characters. And I think that they were getting away with the guest characters. Yeah. You were seeing, you know, some of our favorite horror icons, like from media and other and films and things like that, showing up as guest kills. Since they included us in that way, I think that's how we were able to get away with it. And like, when you get Ghost Jason, it says Never Hike Alone right under his name, but they don't say, this is Ghost Jason from the fan film Never Hike Alone. I think that like there's little subtle things that they took away. And Kyle's in the game too, which is really cool. So when you get Ghost Jason, you end up going to kill Kyle running around in his little red jacket. For Friday the 13th, the game, I was lucky enough to be invited down to design one of the kills for the game. I actually wasn't
aware of that.
So I wasn't like invited just to design a kill. I was just invited to hang out because they were doing a second round of mocap capturing with Kane Hodder for the single player and some of the new Jasons that they had coming out. And it's not far from where I lived. And I called the guys and I was like, if I can get in there any way possible, please let me just be a fly on the wall. And they brought me in and they were running ahead of schedule. And they turned to me and they said, Vin, you got any ideas? And we started kicking around ideas and came up with the idea for the free kick kill.
So we came up
with that after Kane was telling us a story about how the first time he kicked the radio in the middle of Times Square, he didn't see where the radio had landed and he tripped over it and fell on his face in the middle of Times Square in the Jason costume. And then nailed it on the second take. But I was like, as we were kind of coming up with kills, I realized that like I really wanted to knock a body part off. I wanted something big and I wanted something fun. And we came up with free kick. It's like, man, imagine punting someone's head across the map. Wouldn't that be a lot of fun? So, you know, we kind of threw it in there last minute. I didn't expect to see it. They were going to call the kill Never Hike Alone, but their rights lawyers were like, no, we can't make reference to Never Hike Alone or justify it. So they ended up calling it Free Kick. I didn't even know it was going to be in the game. Literally, when they announced, well, we have three new kills coming out. After I'd been there, I mean, they filmed like 100 kills that weekend. And I was thinking, oh, this will be like a, you know, September 2022 release kill that I'll never see. And I saw Free Kick on their list, and I texted Ronnie, and I was like, is that what I think it is? And he was like, it sure is, man. And I was just like, that's amazing. Yeah, so it ended up, you know, it was just us working together. It was a lot of fun, and I was very humbled to get to work with Kane and Ronnie on the floor and all the people over at House of Moves and come up with this really cool kill that, you know, I think that, you know, brings a lot of fun to the game.
Speaking of the game, it has a connection with Never Hike Alone, and that's the inclusion of Tommy Jarvis, a.k.a. Yes. The great Tom Matthews. Probably the most shocked I've ever been in my adult life, because I did not see that coming. How did you get Tom on board for Never Hike Alone?
Tom was invited to join by our executive producer, Barry J, who was lucky enough to meet him on a dinner, had a dinner meeting with him that was set up through some mutual friends that they had. Barry, obviously a big Friday the 13th fan, came on to help us, develop and produce Never Hike Alone. And through his connections, somebody gave him a birthday present of going out on a dinner with Tom Matthews. And during that dinner, mentioned Never Hike Alone, showed him some footage. Tom became interested, and probably a little curious. And, you know, a couple weeks later, him and I sat down. We had probably filmed about half the film by now. This is probably December 2016. And I said, hey, this is our opportunity. This is where I think you fit in. We have this character, the driver character, he's supposed to play this role right now. But if I insert Tommy Jarvis into that role, it changes everything. And it gives us like this ability to surprise fans at the end. And we can work in all these new beats. And, you know, I've really been inspired by it. And if you say yes, I'll begin working on these script pages and we'll go back and forth and you can approve them. And once you approve them, you're in. And I mean, right away, he was like, you know what? He's like, I got a feeling this is going to work out. I'm in. He's like, just keep me up to date and just let's go from there. And so, you know, we went back to Womp Stomp Film headquarters. I was like losing my mind about like having this opportunity. We thought about making an announcement, but held back because we knew that Tommy being in it for only a short period of time had to be treated with a certain delicate hand. So we were like, we can let the cat out of the bag now and possibly raise money and do all these different things, but fans are going to be waiting for Tommy the entire time, and it could be distracting from the story that we're trying to tell. And we never did this with the intention of working with alumni. We wanted to do it on our own. We wanted to stand on our own two legs and show people that, you know, we were fans doing this, and that our addition of Tommy became the ultimate surprise. I think the first surprise was the level of production value that we brought, something that hadn't been seen in a Friday the 13th fan film before. We've seen it in other fan films like Predator Dark Ages and Dirty Laundry and the Dark Power Rangers and all that stuff. So we wanted to try, and we didn't have the resources of some of those other films, but we were like, cinematically, I think we can get there. I think camera-wise, we're, you know, talented enough to go bring that camera look. So let's bring the camera look first. And then, you know, we obviously have one character, so the acting was really important. But what do you do with one character? How do you make that time interesting without a bunch of kills? So it went into stunt work. So we wanted to impress people with our stunt work and some of our, you know, effects work, showing that, like, the wound on his leg and some of the stuff that happens to him during the film. Eventually, you know, we're throwing him through a table and throwing him off a second-story window. And then we're doing a face reveal. And we're doing all these things that you've seen in big Friday the 13th films, but never in a fan film before. So it wasn't just the look at that point. It became the production value of the action and the effects. You know, then we have the illusion scene, the dream sequence, where we crush a head and it looks entirely real and blood's flowing out of the mouth and the back of the head blows out. And,
yeah,
like,
great.
All this stuff, you know, a lot of money being invested in production, time being invested in this. So now we've built up all this capital with fans who have stepped into a fan film for the first time, you know, with that first outlook of like, oh, Jesus, this is a fan film. How good can this really be? Getting to this point now and being like, I cannot believe all this stuff is in a fan film. And then a minute and a half later, doors of the back of the ambulance open and Tommy Jarvis steps in. It was like the ultimate icing on the cake. There was no better way to play that scenario. And I think that was our gift to fans, because we knew how desperate they were for content. And that was the year that they canceled the Friday the 13th that was supposed to come out on October 2017. We had been in 8 years of drought at that point, and we were still starving for stuff. And we wanted to, as best we can, surprise fans and give them something to smile about on Friday the 13th. And I think that because of the way we handled it, because of the avenue we took, because of the relationship we developed with fans, and then that ultimate delivery, that kind of encapsulated all the reasons why people are so, I think, excited about the project and want to see more.
Well, you wore a lot of hats, to say the least, on this production. Obviously, behind the camera. Let's talk about the stuff you did in front of the camera. Ghost Jason, instant classic in my mm-hmm. book. When you were crafting how you were going to portray the character, did you kind of have a particular Jason in mind, or did you want to kind of bring your own sense of style to it?
I mean, I obviously watched everybody, and I prefer the movements of like Ted White and CJ, and there's things that Kane does, and there were things that Derek did, and that were all there. But I think when I started to like research the character, I realized that like I was really, you know, as an actor, no matter what you do, you're stuck in your own body. And you can do things, but sometimes you have to go with what works best for you rather than trying to emulate someone else to a T. And I think for me, I started to think about the way that Jason's built, some of the deformities that he was dealing with, some of the physical limitations that he would have had even as like a normal boy, now grown up, now decomposing, and thinking about the type of injuries that I've got over the years from like playing sports and things like that. Like I walk, like it's funny, I walk with a weird limp and I never notice it. I don't feel like I limp, but everybody always asks, Vinny, are you limping? And I'm like, are you hurt? And I'm like, no, it's just the way I walk. And so I ended up taking this walk that I have and this natural gait and turning into something a little bit more imposing, but then creating that crooked man type feel, not the perfect step, but a long stride and kind of like one stride longer than the other. And that kind of created a cadence and a rhythm that helped me get the movements for Jason down. And then it was really about kind of a headspace of where he's at and how he's built. You know, Ghost Jason doesn't have eyes, but he can see. And how does a character like that move and sense? And so, like, there was a little bit of it, like, him being able to see things, but a lot of it being him, like, sensing it and having to kind of lock in on that sense, that drifting, that, you know, a little bit of that curiosity, that 12-year-old boy curiosity that kind of built into him. So there was a lot that went into, like, the mindset. And so once I felt like I had that down, which was literally prior to us filming, was, you know, trips that I would take up to Big Bear, put on a costume that wasn't Ghost Jason, but was what, you know, was the in-progress version of what we were building. Gotcha. And walking around and just getting a feel for what felt good and what looked good on camera. You know, shooting a lot on camera, going back, studying the footage, saying, oh, you know what, I'm moving too fast, or that head turn is too slow. Like, it's slow, but it shouldn't be like, you know, watching grass grow. Like, you know, there were things like that. So I was really self-critical. And then we got all the way to filming. We started doing it. And the heavier the stunts got and the more grueling the days got, we ended up adding a good friend of mine. His name's Brian Forrest, to be my stunt double. So now you take everything that I've learned, and now I got to sit down with Brian and be like, okay, here's the formula for how Ghost Jason works. Here's the mechanism. Here's when you're in the suit, this is how it's controlled. And, you know, it was a lot of downloading that, but it became a lot of fun at that point to be on the outside of the suit and then being able to kind of tweak and move and, like, kind of poke and prod, where, you know, when I would be in costume, I would have to watch playback, or I'd have to have a monitor set up off screen so I could see what was going on while I'm in costume, and, like, literally positioning myself, like, in the frame, like, wait, I gotta, oh, here I am. Okay, you ready? All right, roll.
You know, I can imagine directing yourself while you're being filmed is probably not an easy task.
Not easy at all. Very complicated. Luckily, I had a cool team, so they were able to really kind of set things up around me and help me out. But, you know, there's certain nuances and things that I'm looking at that it's just a plane that I'm on that's really nerdy. And, you know, they're looking at other things like, you know, camera levels and, you know, framing and things like that. And what I'm really looking at is my performance and what passes my standard. So that's really where it became tough. And with Brian in the costume, it was really easy to kind of, like, unplug my brain, put it in him, watch him go, and then be like, all right, adjust this and this, and this is moves, and this will move on to the next thing, and the camera's got to do this, and I'm running around and, you know, doing all these things. Like, it's much easier for me to be out of the costume than in the costume. So as much as I love acting as Ghost Jason, which I actually have done some more recent acting in the costume for some tests that we're doing, because we're starting to get into that mode for future stuff. It's a lot of fun to play Jason. It's like a really good challenge and really rewarding when you see it played out right.
Well, I think that's going to be a testament to your ability, both as a director and an actor, to be able to plug yourself in, do what you got to do without losing focus, but also be able to kind of convey that to another person to step into a role. Because until literally you just told me that, I had no clue there was anybody else in the costume. So okay. I think you got to, you know, pat yourself on the back a little bit for that. I think you just alluded to it. Let's let the cat out of the bag. And without spoiling anything, what can we expect for Never Hike Alone 2?
Ah, and everyone keeps calling it Never Hike Alone 2. I wonder if that's what it will be called.
Oh, intrigue.
Obviously, Never Hike Alone has sparked a plethora of fan films. I think there were a lot of people, I think, who were kind of starting to get into it as we were getting into it. Then we kind of grabbed the ball, ran with it, came out, had a really big reception, and it changed the game and it changed the expectations, which I think forced everyone else to kind of go back to their own camps and be like, all right, they did that. Well, now we got to try to match this. And, you know, everyone upped their game and everyone tried a little bit harder or figured out that, like, certain things were more in reach than they thought they were before. And, you know, just really took that challenge to, you know, up the level of what a fan film can be. And now we're seeing them. We're seeing them all come out. And that created both, you know, that created a gap for us. So while they're out entertaining everybody right now, that created us our window to go do our home video campaign. Two of them now, because the demand increased so much, and then figure out, like, okay, the sequel for this, which is written, which has been figured out for like a year and a half, but logistically, it's a lot. You know, we want to tell, like, the real full story of what would happen if this really grew out of this event and what it would mean to both Camp Crystal Lake and Tommy Jarvis and Crystal Lake, the town, and where Kyle goes and all these different story threads. There's a lot of story to tell. And when you're talking about a fan film that its first run of crowdfunding only raised about $12,000 that went into the actual film, and the rest of it was like private funding that we had to pay back with our home video campaigns, going into a project that looks like it's going to be upwards of $200,000 to $300,000 in one fell swoop was really daunting, because it's asking a lot of fans. It's asking a lot of fans to show up and put in a lot of money. It also puts us in crosshairs to be like, we might be crossing over the limits for what fan films are really allowed to make. I mean, before we were making $20,000, $50,000, you know, stuff that's like not really interesting to the, we're actually, the studios are the ones who set the $50,000 parameter. They're the ones, don't go over $50,000 and we won't get mad at you. And we're going to have to do that for Never Hike Alone too, as a whole. But what we've decided and what we're going to announce in September is our plan to basically take the concept of what would have been a full-length feature film and break it up into portions that meet the standards of fundraising capabilities.
Oh, and wow, that's a really compelling idea.
Well, it makes it easier for us because we don't have to sit there and try and raise $250,000 to $300,000 and then go out and do a 3-week production schedule on this money and try to do all that with such a limited crew. What we can do is focus on each section of the film, which is pretty isolated to certain areas and story points. And each kind of act in this story has a definite end that if you ended it as, say, a web series, like one episode, like one half hour episode, at the end of that episode, you get everything you wanted out of a good story, and then you're led into the next piece. And the next piece is its own self-contained fundraiser that we just focus on this portion of the story. It has a beginning, a middle, and an end. It acts as, and then acts as a bigger part to the complete series arc. And then moves us a little bit further. And it's really up to fans to come back each time and, you know, give a little bit more and donate. But we space it out. So that way, you know, they're giving $20 in, you know, say September. And then we don't ask them to come back until next, you know, March. And then they can give $20 more. And then later on in that June or that July, they give $20 more. And so it's not asking them right away to be like, all right, we need about $1,500 from everybody if we're going to make this work. It's if over a period of time you keep investing in us, we'll keep creating projects. Kind of like Pantheon or a Patreon in a way. You know, people who keep donating to a show to keep it going. That's kind of how we want to do it for Never Hike Alone. That way we can also look at those production schedules and say, okay, instead of, you know, like I said, that 3 to 4 week production schedule, we can literally shoot, you know, the first piece in 3 days. We can shoot the next piece in 7 days. We can shoot the piece after that in another 7 days. And all we focus is on 7 days at a time while we're also working our 9 to 5 weeks. Like if I go back on set this year to The Rookie, I'm going to have to, you know, give time to that. And I'm only going to have so much time to really plot and plan. And it's really going to work within our personal lives as much as it does our professional lives, because these are our fan films after all. And it's not like I can cut myself a check and live off of it for the rest of the year. You know, all I can do is cut checks for the, you know, to get the equipment so I can do the things that I've always wanted to do. So there is a little bit of a self-sacrifice that goes into it, meaning that like you get all this money and you get to spend it on the thing you want to do. But in the meantime, you have to figure out another way to get income so you can continue to pay your rent. So I know fans are really pushing us and saying the time is now and like, you got to do it, you got to do it. Well, we also needed to make sure that like, we weren't going to get to the end of Never Hike Alone and then find myself living under an overpass down by the river.
Well, I kind of find myself in an opposite position where, you know, we've gone this is the longest period between Friday the 13th sequels. And whereas maybe a younger me would be like, yes, get that shit out there now. I'm a little more apt to wait. I would prefer that it be cultivated and you know, the attention to detail, which I'm sure that you guys are, you know, putting that best foot forward. So take your time. That's from me, and I can't speak for everybody else. But for my money, take your time, and the fans will be there.
I think we are in that front. I think we've taken the time we've needed. These other fan films have been able to come out and keep people entertained, and they're about to get released. And I think that it's the perfect time for us to release our plans is when the other ones come out. You know, Friday the 13th this year is going to be big. There's going to be 2 fan films dropping. People are going to be excited. They're going to watch them. And then as soon as they watch them and they ingest them and they start talking about them, the next thing they're going to want to know is what's next. And so we want to be there with that answer and be like, hey, you know, you guys just got off your ride. Congratulations. You finished your projects. And now the next ride is starting and it begins right now. And here's the ride we're going on. And we're going to announce, you know, the names of each of the episodes, kind of what happens in each section, and then what our fundraising goals to what fundraising goals we have to meet to get each episode made. And it's up to the fans, to, like, depending on how much we raise, will depend on how many episodes we actually get to go. Our goal is to at least finish the story of Never Hike Alone so it answers all the questions that people had about the first film and some other cool things that I think people have always wanted to see as Friday the 13th fans. And then the bonus material is kind of all the extra bits and the continuation of the story, which goes into a higher production value, which requires a lot more production logistics and actors and things like that. What we want to give people is, you know, just, we just want to fill out the entire piece and you know, do it as the best way that we can.
I'm literally salivating at the idea of this. You have me very excited. Before we close up shop for the day, I want to close out with, I just want to know, what's your favorite Friday? What's your least favorite Friday? Because I want to see if we're on the same page.
First favorite Friday is Friday the 13th, Part 6, Jason Lives. It was like, it's the one makes that just sense. Encapsulates it all for me. Yeah, I mean, obviously with the Tommy angle, but also just, I don't know, Jason's just so unstoppable in that film. There's something I like about that. And that's going to be something that we push forward with Ghost Jason as we go on. It's like, throw whatever you want in front of Jason. He's going to come right through it and do it. Like, one of my favorite parts of Never Hike Alone is putting an axe in his neck and then watching him pull it out. You know, it's like, I want to keep exploring things like that, that I think take Jason to the next level. We want to see him do those things on screen, which is really cool. It's the same thing like when Sheriff Garris was shooting with a shotgun and he falls down and gets right back up and keeps coming at him, which is really cool. So those are elements, you know, just in that, and just like the production quality and value and just thought with the lightning and the rain and the way it's handled. It's just an awesome movie. It's such a rock star of a movie. And then my least favorite is the remake.
Now, I've heard you say this on many occasions. I think you and I are probably more in line with our... I don't hate the 2009 movie. I think everything before the credits is pretty good. But it's so homogenized and mm-hmm. clean. Really, when I articulate what your issues with 2009 are.
My issues with that film are that, unlike every Friday before it, except for maybe Freddy vs. Jason, which is another one that's very low on my list, and for the same reason, is that it had what the other Fridays didn't have, and that was a budget, and that was all the power they needed to do whatever they wanted, and those were the decisions that they made. And I wasn't happy with it. For them to spend $20 million and make a mediocre film, I hold it at a higher standard than I do a Jason X, which was made for like $4 million and was supposed to be like a direct-to-video type thing. You know, it's like when you're coming at me with $4 million and you tell me you're doing a space movie, my expectations are set at a different level. When you tell me you've got like all the production acuity of Michael Bay, the guy who did the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and you have 11 other films to look at and go, yes and no, this works and that doesn't work, and you focus a lot on the things that don't work and try to amplify those... What are you doing? Like,
I think you nailed it on the head. Exactly why my issues with 2009.
I think that, you know, they have an actor like Derek Mears stepping into the role.
Who was great.
Yeah, he was great. And I think he was underutilized. I thought the kills were very stagnant and not very interesting. A lot of them weren't shot very well. They were very dark. I couldn't see what was going on. I actually saw more of what happened in some of the scenes in the behind the scenes than I actually did in the actual movie. And it just overall with character and pacing and story, it was all over the place. And I lose interest. It's one of the only Friday the 13th films that as I'm watching it, I get to the halfway point and I just don't care anymore. And all the new elements that they added, like having tunnels and, you know, the way that Jason finds his mask is very boring. It didn't make any sense. It seemed to me like all of the opportunities they had to create really new iconic scenes, they were really just kind of par for the course. Oh, yeah. He just finds the mask in a box. I mean, you know what I mean? Like in part three, there was like a little bit of a nuance to it. We saw Shelley with the mask. There was a big deal with the mask. And then, you know, and then Jason shows up and he basically pulls a Michael Myers, putting on the ghost costume to like trick someone that it's not, and to trick someone into thinking that they're Shelley. And there's a moment and there's a reveal of the mask. And in this, it was just very like, because we had previous knowledge of the franchise, it really leaned on that. and didn't try to come up with something new. And I think that that's what I tried to push the envelope with something new with Never Hike Alone was, if you want to do stuff from the past, like, do it with care. And I don't felt that any care went into the direction of the way it does, the way it was done. Like, them walking into a cabin, and the way that we figure out that the Voorhees lived there was that Jason's name is carved into a bed, which doesn't make any sense because they wouldn't have lived there year round because it's a camp.
Thank you so much.
So I really just felt that, like, Friday the 13th, 2009 is just, it's like someone taking bad medicine and saying, open your mouth, idiot, and swallow it because this is what you want, rather than being like, I've studied you. I respect you. I am one of you, and I want to make something that makes you, like, walk out of the theater just wanting to see 12 more of these things. And I didn't feel that way as a big Friday the 13th fan coming out of the theater. I felt like, I don't know where this film goes from here. What kind of Jason is this? Is this a human Jason or an undead Jason? Because he just survived something that someone who's human would never survive. And I know I'm thinking about it too much, but if you go back to the first four films, you can kind of be like, yeah, maybe he could survive that. You know what I mean? But, like, and then the way he's killed, like, think about it. Like, in the first three or four films, or in all the films, it's always iconic. It's like the machete through the shoulder that goes all the way down, or like the axe in the head, or a machete through the face, or chained at the bottom of the lake. Like, this was like, oh, he gets hung, but then dropped, and then put into the thing, and then he gets out, and then they stab him really awkwardly through his sternum. Like, it's not like, it's just like stumbling, like, I don't really know what to, I guess the film ends this way. And then they do that lazy ass sequence where, like, why would they even bother dragging him down to the lake and throwing him in the water?
I knew, like, that was going to happen. You could see it from a mile away, and I left so disappointed. Like, I realize you're quote unquote remaking the movie, which you're really not, because it's, you know, Jason and it's Mrs. Voorhees' story. But yeah, I felt it was very, very lazy in its attempts.
Yeah, and so that's where I get mad at the film. It's so a film with a $20 million budget is lazy. That, I mean, like, that, I take offense to that. I take offense by the filmmakers who were given that opportunity to go make that film. I know Shannon and Swift are big Friday the 13th fans, but I just got to say, like, I just want to know what some of the decisions, like, were going into some of the decisions that went into the film, because I criticize the film as being something that is only – the only law that they prescribed to was what made sense for the scene, not what made sense for the movie. So, like, if you isolate scenes – you get cool moments like, oh, he shot somebody with a bow and arrow through the head in the water. But then you break that down and think about what it means in the context of the story. But, like, wait, those guys didn't even go to Camp Crystal Lake. Why is he attacking innocent people out on the water? Isn't he drawing attention to himself? I thought he just wanted to be left alone. This isn't a character who just wants to be left alone. But I guess it's a cool scene, so let's move on. And you can get away with that in a film if you do that. And, like, but you can only play that card so many times. But that film literally plays that card every single scene. One scene does not lead to the next scene, does not lead to the next scene. It's just everything's kind of a self-contained moment. And then when you move on, it doesn't really fit like it feels in place. And, like, you're jumping to another character and you're like, wait, what were these people doing? Why do I care? And then, you know, I mean, there were literally four characters in that film who had nothing to do. They literally, like, one literally starts to masturbate in the middle of a living room because he's got nothing better to do. Which, who does that, like, in the middle of the room? Somebody could walk in at any time.
I've never really even thought about that, so you've just added another notch against the film for me.
If we ever sat down and, like, watched the film, like, frame by frame, I could sit there and, like, pull every, and I'm sure you can do that with most of the Fridays, but the reason why I do it with this one so hard is because it was $20 million and it was supposed to reboot the franchise, and what it did is it stopped it cold, dead in its tracks. And that's a fact. We have not had a film since then because of that film's mediocrity, because of that film's drop-off. That's why they didn't make a sequel to it, and they canceled that one. And then they spent years trying to fumble, how are we going to bring this back in relevant, because they could never figure it out. Although I thought David Bruckner had a very good script with Nick Ancosta. Why they didn't make that one, I don't know. Why they changed it to the Breck Eisner script, which is awful.
Thank you. I when that leaked online, I read it, and it made my stomach turn at how stupid it was. So I'm glad that movie did not get made.
Yeah, and all that way, the way they tried to put Elias into the story was really dumb. You know, the fact that our Jason that we know and love doesn't show up until page 72 in that script, and the page in the script's only 92 pages. It's amazing. And it's like, this isn't what we wanted. You know, we wanted what Bruckner did, which was like, I mean, I don't know if you read that script, but it had a very cool opening where basically these kids who are closing up the new Camp Crystal Lake, which is located across from the old Camp Crystal Lake, basically say on the last night of camp, basically like, you know what, let's go check out the old camp. They all get in boats and go across a foggy lake and arrive at Camp Crystal Lake and basically wake up the curse. And Jason's undead, and they do a bunch, and he kills people in crazy ways. And it's got a really cool, like, vibe to it. And it's like the Jason we've always wanted to see. And how they didn't recognize that as, like, and even though it was a first draft, if you ever read it, and they were going to continue to do, like, rewrites and, like, really smooth it out. But, like, all the elements for an amazing experience in the theater with Jason Voorhees were in that script. And the fact that, you know, executives at Paramount couldn't recognize that was a big red flag to me, to know that there is literally, I don't think, anyone in any of these studios who really understands the fans. And
we don't have Frank Mancuso Jr., you know, at the Stern anymore. Thankfully, though, we've got people like Vincent DeSante out there to keep the flag alive for Friday the 13th. Do you want to plug your social media so everybody can track you down?
Yeah, definitely. Just follow us on Womp Stomp Films, WOMPSTOMPFILMS, on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, or go to WompStompFilms.com to find links to each of those. Make sure you subscribe to YouTube and like and follow us and all those fun things. You know, give Never Hike Alone a thumbs up and watch it about 36 times so we can get up to 1 million pretty fast.
All right, well, I'm sure it'll get there probably. You know, we got a Friday the 13th right around the corner, so.
Yeah, I honestly think that we're the way that we get our plays and the way it kind of builds up, we're really looking like September 13th could be our celebration of 1 million episodes, a million views.
Well, let's hope for that, and I'll give you a congratulatory wave goodbye. So thank you so much, Vincent. We'll be in touch, and thank you so much for stopping by the Black Lodge.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, assholes! It's me, Boner the Skeleton, mascot of the Rants from the Black Lodge podcast, here to sell you some shit you probably can't afford. Are you low on cash? That's not a problem. Sell your children. Sell your blood. Go to the jack-off clinic and give them a sperm sample. We don't care how you get the money, as long as you give it to us. Want a t-shirt? Want a sticker or a mug to show that you're a true friend and a member of the Rant Army? Well, guess what? Go to Rant Army Surplus. The link is in the description. And if you don't buy something, then fuck you.
All right, welcome back, Rant Army. I sincerely hope you enjoyed the interview with Vin DeSante. He and I spoke for over an hour after that interview, and he just proceeded to drop spoilers galore for the upcoming sequels on me. Now, of course, I'm sworn to secrecy, and I would never betray that trust, but I gotta say, this has been the hardest thing to keep under wraps. I haven't even told the other members of the podcast. So, Vin, you owe me one, buddy. You shouldn't have told me any of that shit, but I am going to keep your secret. But guys, you don't have to wait too much longer. Friday, September 13th, everything's going to be revealed. Now, speaking of revelations, we have an announcement to drop on that date as well, so stick around to the end of this episode for an update on what's going on here with the podcast and our partners at the Brain Dead Network. But first things first, we had a plethora of Never Hike Alone questions come in this month, so let's hit the ground running and see what we got in the mailbag. Our first question comes from Jason Davis. What is the largest technical problem you see in most independent and fan-made films? Preparation, 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 preparation. I've worked behind and in front of a few low-budget and no-budget movies, and there's an idea that technology's gotten to a point where all you have to do is point a camera at something, and that's good enough. Shot composition, blocking, understanding how, you know, one shot is going to be edited into another, those things are paramount, and I think Never Hike Alone succeeds in all that because it was well planned out.
preparation. So that would be my take on why most fan films suck that, and they also indulge a lot in fan service, I guess would be the best way to put it, and that's not always a bad thing. I mean, there's fan service in Never Hike Alone. Benefit to the fan service is that you don't see it coming, and when it happens, you erupt. It's not just there for the sake of being there. It had a purpose. So, there you go. Preparation is fan service. Our second question, I'm going to butcher this guy's name, Raoul Howlett Ryan. They managed to bring back Tom Matthews as Tommy Jarvis. Can they bring back Jennifer Siegel as Megan in the sequel? Say that five times fast. Jennifer Siegel in the sequel. I can't say it's not impossible. I will tell you this, of all the spoilers that Vin gave me, that was not one of them. I would imagine that Vin is smart enough to know that if it made sense for the story, that he would at least entertain the idea. But here's the thing. From what I know, I don't see a place for her. And I don't want to be that as an indictment to say that, you know, this is for sure not going to happen. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there is a perfectly good place for her to fit in and it would make logical sense. I don't think it's going to happen. So, you know, knock on wood, maybe I'm wrong. I mean, if it benefits the story, I'll give Vin the benefit of the doubt. This question comes from Jason Schultz. Vincent has stated that Never Hike Alone takes place after the events of Jason Takes Manhattan. However, the crime scene is still intact from the original Friday the 13th. Tommy and Jason obviously have their history, so I take it that it takes place in the universe of 4 through 6. So my question is Camp Forest Green for Part 6 actually a different camp than Camp Crystal Lake? I think you knocked the nail on the head there. I mean, look at it this way. Part 1, you have Camp Crystal Lake, and then Part 2, you have a camp that's across, you know, the lake. It makes sense that there's a lot of camps in this area. It's wooded, so of course there would be plenty. And I mean that the lake is Crystal Lake. They're all kind of tangentially related. Now, in Part 6, they changed the name to Camp Forest Green, and they did, I mean, the whole town was Forest Green. But in Part 7, all that's undone, so who knows? Continuity's kind of out the window when it comes to that. This next question comes from Jason L. Cowden. If you find a lake, would you recommend sex, then swimming? Yes! Fuck while you can, because Jason's going to get hashtag triggered and jam a machete where the sun don't shine. So get your kicks before you end up dead. This comes from Stevie Sanders. What are your thoughts on the Jason versus Michael Myers short fan film? I don't feel entirely comfortable, you know, raking these guys over the coals. It's obvious that they had a passion for both Friday the 13th and Halloween, and it's something we're never going to see on the big screen, or at least not in my lifetime because of rights and stuff. But, man, the bar has been raised so high with fan films now that if this had been made 10 or 15 years ago, I might be singing a different tune, but I just feel like this was a little bit of a waste of my time. This question comes from Titty Flip and Travis. Why doesn't Jason just fight like a man instead of sneaking up on people like a little bitch? Well, if he did that, the movie would be a half an hour long and it'd be nothing but, you know, mayhem and blood and gore. And you know what? Some people might want it that way, but I personally like the setup of the first few films where you know, you've got to set things up. You have a half an hour of setting up your principal characters. You have a half an hour of Jason stalking them, and then you've got that half an hour of just, you know, all-out mayhem. That works. It's the formula. It's a slasher convention. And if we wanted to see Jason just killing, then that's what fan films are for. So, see? They all serve a purpose. This question comes from Fat Tony. Do you think the movie suffers from a lack of naked, luscious breast? Yes and no. Here's the thing. This movie has its roots in Part 6. There's no nudity in Part 6. This movie contains one character up against the force of Jason. It wouldn't have made a lot of sense for there to be a bunch of big boobied, bouncing co-eds. So I wouldn't have been opposed, but I don't think it fit the narrative of this film. So this comes from Ben Hopkins. This lawsuit between Sean Cunningham and Victor Miller is preventing new Friday the 13th films from being produced. With that in mind, do you consider Never Hike Alone canon? Until there is a movie that comes out, officially produced, that tells me otherwise, yes, I do consider this canon. How could I not? It brought back Tom Matthews to the role of Tommy Jarvis. That's more continuity than I can give most of the films after Part 8, and even some of the films in the actual Paramount years. So, it harkens back to that time period I love so much of the series, so how could I not consider it canon? This question comes from Mark Hunt, and we're going to answer this one and then move off to our big announcement. Do you think Vincent DeSanti would be a good fit for a Friday the 13th feature? Yes, 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 1,000 times yes. Speaking with him outside of the podcast, I got such a boner, is the way I can put it, for basically his pitch of what he would do with a Friday the 13th film. And I'm not going to spoil that. I mean, that's something he may disclose. Look him up. But he showed me pictures of what the Never Hike Alone mask was based off of, and then, like, you know, kind of the beats of, like, what he wanted to do with it. You know, he's untested, I guess, for a big budget film, but they have to look at things in terms of what he was able to accomplish with nothing. You give this guy a little bit of a budget, and let's just be honest, a Friday the 13th film is not going to have, you know, a $100 million budget. What have you got to lose? This movie is going to make money regardless. The appetite is there. Put it in the hands of a guy like Vin DeSanti, who can be the Kevin Feige for the Friday the 13th films going forward, and I think we're only going to come up aces. Our first big announcement is for our partners at the Brain Dead Network. They have a lot of great interviews lined up for October, but this one is going to break the internet. The biggest of these being Tommy McLaughlin, who directed Friday the 13th Part 6, Jason Lives. So if you're in a Friday the 13th mood from this Never Hike Alone episode, well, I hope that carries over into October, because you're not going to want to miss this. So don't wait another second. Go right now. Follow them on social media. I'll leave a link in the description. Now, as for us, I'm sure those of you that are the faithful Rant Army members, you realize we omitted our commentary track for Never Hike Alone, which is one of the things that we're known for here. Well, there's good reason for it. So go ahead, write this on your calendars. Friday, September 13th at 7 p.m., that's Eastern Standard Time, we're going to do something different. We're going to do a watch party in the Facebook group for Never Hike Alone. And me and the other guys, we're still going to drop all that trivia goodness that you love so much, but it's going to give us a chance to interact with some of you out there in the Rant Army that we don't normally have the chance to do. So please, if you got the time, you got nothing going on, I mean, there's going to be a lot of good Friday the 13th stuff released that day. Just make this a part of your lineup. You know, you're going to watch Vengeance. You're going to watch Voorhees. But 7 o'clock belongs to us. Come watch Never Hike Alone and have a good time, guys. Till then, don't forget to follow us on social media at Rants Black Lodge. Subscribe to the podcast on the many platforms we're available on, including iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, Podbean, Player FM, iHeartRadio. And don't forget to visit us on our homepage at juicykruger.com. Till next month, Rant Army, keep marching!